Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Damme in Washington, and here are some of the stories we're covering for you today, Friday, September 27th, 2019. South Sudan's foreign minister says President Kiir and Riek Machar are serious about a November deadline for a unity government.
Peace is what South Sudan needs right now. And anything apart from peace will not be a priority. The priority is how to implement this peace agreement.
And some Juba residents say health care has gone from bad to worse.
I had a thought, why should I immediately go for a appendectomy when he just did some examination to me?
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's foreign minister, Awat Deng, says her government has every intention of meeting the November 12th deadline to form a national unity government. Deng says the recent meeting between President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar tackled most of the pending security issues that could have prevented the parties from meeting the deadline. Deng says she is in the United States now with a message for the Trump administration.
Well, I think the most important thing, John, is peace. Peace and peace, if you ask me how many times. Peace is what South Sudan needs right now. And anything apart from peace will not be a priority. The priority is how to implement this peace agreement so that we can, restore stability, we can restore peace in our country, and making sure that we facilitate our people to come back home and implement this peace agreement so that things that are supposed to be done by national government in the transitional period is done. This peace agreement is an opportunity for the people of South Sudan. It has to be supported politically, materially, so that we implement this peace agreement. This is the opportunity for people of South Sudan to settle their differences, because this is agreement that was negotiated by the parties themselves.
You met recently with U.S. government officials in Washington, D.C. What did you tell them?
Well, I was briefing them of what has happened in Juba for the last 3 weeks. The mediation of our president between the Sudanese group, those who were fighting, and the Sudanese government. So there were two meetings taking place, the one of the Sudan with its opposition group, and then Dr. Riek had face-to-face with the president. So the one of Sudan, after 3 days, they were able to reach the what they call Juba Declaration of Principle, where they will start now to lay out the roadmap of discussion. So that one was signed on the 12th. So issue of the state was discussed, the boundaries and number of states. But that one is with IGAD, because IGAD is the one who have the mandate to decide. The commission has submitted its report. So mine was just to brief them about what has happened in Juba. So
your government has pledged to form the transitional government of national unity by November 12. SPLM-IO Deputy Chairman Henry Oduor wrote an open letter to President Kiir, reacting to a statement by President Kiir recently when he said that he will form the government of national unity with or without Dr. Riek Machar. Oduor's letter was quite strong and direct to President Salva Kiir. I can see some obstacles or challenges here to the formation of the government of national unity. What is your opinion on that?
You know, John, there is no peace agreement without challenges. I think every peace agreement has its own challenges, but it's how you handle challenges as political figures that is the most important thing. So I think in the state of us now predicting that the government will not be formed, and when there's a commitment made by the two principals that they will form the government on the 12th, Dr. Riek's presence in Juba was to discuss purely on formation of the government and the issues facing the peace agreement. And I cannot say that there are no challenges, especially on funding. The agreement is very expensive to fund because any other political issues can be still handled on the process of implementation, because the agreement was not going to be implemented in 8 months. There were specific activities for the pre-transition, and one of them was the security arrangement, which has now been addressed. The cantonment areas are finished, and now the training is started on the 17th September of this month. So, and that is going to take the 5 weeks to finish.
That is Awot Deng, South Sudan's foreign minister, speaking earlier today with my colleague John Tanza from New York City, where Deng is attending the United Nations General Assembly. Some Juba residents say healthcare services in the city are pretty awful. They say medical staff in private hospitals often misdiagnose illnesses and then prescribe the wrong drugs. Some residents accuse medical personnel of even knowing they failed to properly diagnose the problem, but prescribe medication anyway to earn money. Winnie Serino has that story for VOA from Juba.
Resident Kennedy Muklia says he visited Juba's EB clinic in 2016 when he had lower abdomen pain. After physical exam and lab tests, a doctor told him he had appendicitis and he needed to undergo surgery. Muklia says he accepted the doctor's diagnosis but was hesitant to go to the hospital for the operation.
I had a thought, why should I immediately go for appendectomy when he just did some examination to me? And then I told him, is there any medicine you can give me so that I can be able to take, because I'm not ready to go to the theater and undergo surgery. He hesitated, and I said, fine, can I come back to you tomorrow? So I went home, I took some antibacteria, I stayed for some time. And then I sought second opinion in Nairobi. I went to Nairobi Hospital, and from Nairobi Hospital, they did some examination to me, and they found out my appendix is not inflamed, so I don't need to go for surgery.
Muklia says afterward he visited another hospital, but they also concluded that his appendix was not the problem. He says it's not uncommon for Juba medical staff to misdiagnose illnesses and prescribe the wrong medicine because doctors and nurses just want to make money. South Sudan in Focus contacted Dr. Joseph Lowe, director of EB Clinic, for a comment, but he declined to comment. Another resident, who prefers to be identified only as Christine for safety reasons, says one morning in 2018, she took her husband, who suffers from diabetes, and felt like he was having a stroke to Juba's Freedom International Hospital. She says she was surprised when a nurse told her there was no doctor at the hospital to see her husband.
Nobody attended to us. They said the doctor was not around and the available doctor was still on call. I said, this is an emergency. We need to intervene now. This is a stroke patient, please. We ran up and down, and then they told us, no, let us first wait.
Dr. Ambrose Anthony, the medical director for Freedom Hospital, says he doubts anyone was ever told there was no doctor available at Freedom Hospital.
Things may happen, but I'm not sure it happened here in Freedom International Hospital, actually. Maybe it happened outside or somewhere, and the message goes out without any information from the hospital even. Because I'm the medical director and I know anything which is running inside here.
Christine says after waiting for hours in vain, she transferred her husband to Aspen Hospital, where he was given some medication, but she was later advised to visit Chinese Friendship Hospital to meet with a neurologist. Christine says she was shocked to find upon their arrival at Chinese Friendship Hospital that no doctors or nurses rushed to help her husband, even though he was in a critical condition. She says after her husband was diagnosed with diabetes and stroke, a nurse provided medication, but she says the nurse then tried to inject insulin into her husband's vein using a cannula, which she knew was wrong.
He said he was going to administer insulin to my husband because I said my husband is diabetic. I told him, okay. But then when he started putting the insulin intravenous, I told him, my friend, you put insulin, you inject it on the thigh or on the stomach, depending on what the site is, but you never give insulin intravenously. He said, no, he knows what he's doing. Luckily enough, as he was doing that, putting the cannula, my husband jolted from his sleep, and then the cannula just slipped.
Christine says the medicine bottle fell and broke, and the nurse decided to leave and never returned. She says when her husband's condition worsened, no doctor came to treat her husband. Christine says she decided to fly her husband to Uganda, then Nairobi, where he received proper medical attention. Regarding Christine's accusations over how insulin was injected into her husband, Dr. Phillips says patients and their families don't always know what is best.
The mode at which we give our medications. For those people who are being injected, we do not give directly. Like you go and get penicillin and then you inject somebody in the buttocks or in the thigh, or you go and get ceftriaxone and you load that 10cc syringe and you give it directly, no.
Other Juba residents complain that certain medical personnel insist on carrying out surgeries even when the patient could be treated with medicine. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
South Sudan in Focus also reached out to Dr. Mayan Machut, Dean of the College of Medicine and Chairperson of South Sudan's General Medical Council, for comment. He did not answer our repeated calls or respond to text messages. Authorities at Dr. John Garang Memorial University of Science and Technology in Bor have expelled more than 100 students who they say did not meet the admission requirements, even though some have been studying at the school for the past 4 years. Deng Gai Deng has the details for VOA from Bor.
Dr. Akima Jenabuny, a spokesman for the school, says the students have been expelled because the university is implementing admission procedures and academic standards per directives from the National Education Ministry.
I can just give you a few examples. Student number one, Mr. X, was rejected because he failed in English. Another student was rejected because he failed CRE and mathematics. Another student was rejected because he passed only 6 subjects. There is different reasons for rejection.
Yen Oral Lam, South Sudan Minister of Higher Education, says the issue came to the ministry's attention in June.
As a ministry, we were not aware for the admission of those students for the last period of time. However, we received a list and note from the university that there are those number of the students who have no index number. I directed for the formation of the committee to investigate the matter. Then the committee come back with the recommendation.
Dr. Coach Ruben, the university's academic registrar, claims the rejections were clearly based on the upgraded regulations.
I can just give you a few examples. Student number one, Mr. X, was rejected because he failed in English. Another student was rejected because he failed CRE and mathematics.
The students say they cannot understand how university authorities can legally say they have not met admission requirements years after the government admitted them. Kwai Joseph Makir, a fourth-year student of public administration, says he was shocked to learn that he is being expelled when he is just about to graduate from the university.
But the time when I was admitted, I was taken by the government, and my name appeared in a newspaper that I was admitted to University of Juba in 2009. And then in 2010, I went there and then I completed my diploma there and I came here to upgrade at Diara John Garang University of Science and Technology. It is a surprise to me that people say I'm rejected.
Mayan Deng Abram, another fourth-year student of public administration, says he too was surprised to learn at this late date the university is expelling him.
We have passed through everything. We don't understand somebody who graduated you with a diploma, and then again later, he come and told you that you are not qualified, and he was the one graduating you with that diploma.
Dr. John Garang Memorial University student Panchul Madit says he and the other expelled students are frustrated by the university's decision and will take legal measures against the university to ensure their issue is addressed.
In a real sense, as somebody completing 3 years in the university and did a first semester in the fourth year doing research now for the final year, and has been stopped from continuing with the lectures. We supposed to consult all the authority concerns from the university, from the higher education authority, and also from the Department of Admissions.
Dr. John Gareng Memorial University of Science and Technology is one of the public universities across South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Bor.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America. Holland makes a large donation to boost South Sudan's food production. Find out more on that when we return.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how has technology impacted your life?
When I want information, I just pick my phone. I just go to Google, and all the information that I want, I get it just right where I stand.
It made me to be so social to people, like on Facebook. I've known so many people, knowing how they are going on in life, and also on WhatsApp, chatting with my friends.
It's educative to me as well, because if I need to know something about history, something about a disease, something about some medicine, I just go and read about it online.
When I need information, I don't necessarily have to go to the library. All I need to do is just pick up my tablet and I Google whatever I want to know about whilst in the comfort of my home.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America. The UN Food and Agricultural Organization, or FAO, in South Sudan has received nearly $7 million from the Netherlands to support farming communities. An FAO official in South Sudan says the money will boost food resiliency across the country. Onan Walter Solomon has more for VOA from Juba.
Mesak Malo, the FAO country representative in South Sudan, says the money will be used to produce quality seeds in local farming communities, which will lead to increased food production.
Currently, we are importing 86% of all the seeds that we distribute in South Sudan, and we only have 14% of seeds that are produced locally. We are importing from Sudan, the Wadhamed sorghum. We are from Uganda, Kenya. We import a lot of maize. We import a lot of vegetables from Italy, from Netherlands. And so this funding is going to be quite significant to bring back the seed production capacity that South Sudan used to have.
Malu says helping local farmers is a much better way to go than constantly providing food aid to South Sudanese.
You go to areas like Rank, you go to areas like Eastern Equatorial, Western Equatorial, Western Bagazal. These are areas in which the population already has the knowledge. It just got broken. So we're going to begin with those low-hanging areas whereby we're not starting from zero. The populations just lost that capacity due to these eventualities that the country has gone through.
27-year-old Regina Neck, a mother of five and a subsistence farmer from Obo Payam in Torit State, Magui County, arrives at Juba's customs market to sell more than 700 kilograms of maize grains she harvested last season. Speaking in her local Lacholi language, Anek says she and her husband grow maize, granats, coffees, and other tuber crops from seeds distributed by an NGO in early 2016.
GAZ and Caritas have been distributing seeds for crops like maize, beans, and other vegetables. They gave us 5 kilograms of seeds for beans, 3 kilograms of cowpeas, and 5 kilograms of maize. We planted these seeds and cassava steamed. Since then, whenever we realize a good harvest, we should keep a basin of each of the grains and dash them with red pepper powder to preserve and protect them against insects and pests. We leave some cassava in the ground. We store maize seed above a fireplace inside our kitchen.
ANEF is urging agencies to provide farmers with pesticides and facilities to store and preserve seeds.
Sometimes when there is poor harvest, we resort to eating the grains and tubers. Again, we have to struggle or sell part of little food to buy grains and cassava stems to plant. There is also a certain type of weevil that eats the seed from stored corn maize. Then the grains fail to germinate when planted. And if they germinate, there are some worms that end up eating the seedling foliage leaves and the maize plant fails to produce corn.
Malo says to end persistent food shortages in South Sudan, the FAO is working to produce quality seeds that over the next 3 years will address the problem of an estimated 6.35 million South Sudanese who are not sure where their next meal is coming from.
We will be working to build about 14 other companies that are within South Sudan so that they can move up and be able to produce the seeds. Currently, the demand of seeds in South Sudan stands at almost 8,000 metric tons. The so-called, those that we can say they are a big scale, they are only producing 2,000 metric tons of seed. The gap is very huge.
Malo says seed preservation is a key factor toward overcoming South Sudan's food gap so that local farmers can produce popular vegetables like sorghum, millet, maize, and cassava. For VOA News, I am Onan Walter Solomon in Juba.
And it's time now for our listener comments. Many of you responded to our stories that aired this week on the show. A listener who identified himself only as Mandela and a concerned citizen of South Sudan writes, "We, the persons with disabilities in South Sudan, feel forgotten and left out by our government, civil society organizations, faith-based groups, and other key players, including non-governmental organizations, during the peace process and after. Since the peace agreement was signed September 12th, no person with a disability has had access to the document. During the conflict, persons with disabilities suffered double and bared the brunt of the war, yet we are not represented at the talks." Lee in Ye writes, "Thanks, VOA, for your coverage. We are well protected since VOA started South Sudan in focus. The high level of the army carrying out killings and rapes in Ye has been reduced. VOA is much stronger than all the unmissed soldiers in South Sudan. And thanks for upgrading to WhatsApp." And a listener identifying himself or herself only as Jet in Ye River State writes, "We don't see peace. Leaders talk about peace. We in Ye don't experience the peace they are every day singing about like a song. Every day, gunshots are still heard. People are not safe to move in their own village. Where is the peace?" Bol Riat from Juba writes, "I like your show, South Sudan in Focus. I urge the youth of South Sudan to make education a priority in life for the future and let them not be used by politicians for their selfish interests, which destroy the future of youth." Nigor Kwat Goreng of Juba writes, "Many of us want to go abroad in the quest for a better life, but to be sincere, our home, South Sudan, is the best. We are the ones who turned it into a shark's mouth." Mal Adao Mal in Boertown writes, "Our little piece in Ye is due to the VOA WhatsApp and the coverage, since the world can hear who is wrong in South Sudan. Thanks to God. Thanks, technology. Thanks, VOA. Long live VOA." Well, thanks for that, Mal. Natal Dennis in Juba writes, "I am very happy about how VOA is helping people's voices be heard. Thanks for having your contact. I would like to make clear to our National Ministry of Labor to look into how these foreign investors are utilizing the locals. I suggest if the ministry is able to listen to us, we expect it to enact a minimum labor wage for all locals or foreign nationals. We are tired of this foreign intimidation, more especially the Asians. They are taking advantage of our desperation." And Buni Cosmas from Morobe Camp in Uganda says he appreciates VOA News because, in his words, we can know what is happening in South Sudan. My question is why IGAD needs only Dr. Machar and Kiir to talk face to face. What about other parties who were not signatories for the peace deal? Garamako in Torit urges South Sudanese leaders to, in his words, give peace a chance. What happened in Mawut is completely unacceptable, he writes. Let's all join hands and contribute to the implementation of the revitalized peace agreement. And Silva Amabi Bawu from Yay says, I'm very excited to listen to the VOA program every Monday to Friday. Please let me know why schools are only operating in towns but not in rural areas. Most children are living without education in villages. Please let the Ministry of Education know there are children crying for education in rural areas of South Sudan. Well, thanks, Silva, and thanks to all of you for contacting us on our WhatsApp numbers. We enjoy hearing from all of you.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
Well, that's our show for this Friday. We leave you with the song Pio by Emmy Yoere.
Amboroni kali chipare komika tini mbori na jika ko onga rongoleyo komika pini mbori na jika ko ome rongoleyo adeni kali akumani wachiriyo kirikiri adeni kali minanja jako abakule mini kali minanja bajangako miadunga yote Minungu pachipa ate Nyadunga yote Jimi manyasa Nyadunga yote Jimi manyasa ko
Chibaki netu Andaye kinarago tiyo chini Chibaki netu Andaye kinarago tiyo chini Chibaki netu Andaye kinayamu kanga chini
Soni poto chiburu koyure na waragata buru wati.
We've been listening to Emmy Yoere with the song Pio. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Thanks for listening. Have a safe and peaceful weekend, and we hope you join us again on Monday for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Miadunga yoto, jimi manya sakwa. Miadunga yoto,
imi maya sako.